Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. Once the most powerful woman on Wall Street, the former chief financial officer of then-collapsing Lehman Brothers, speaking out for the first time on her fall and her journey back to work-life balance, coming full circle with Erin Callan. Today on Business Talk with Jim Campbell, Erin Callan Montella was the chief financial officer of Lehman Brothers, the only female member of its executive committee during the height of the financial crisis from late 07 until mid-2008. Her tenure as CFO coinciding with Bear Stearns' collapse and then ending just prior to Lehman's bankruptcy filing. She was the public face of Lehman during this period. She was recognized in 2007 as a woman to watch by Fortune magazine in their annual review of the most powerful women in business. The New York Post ranked her as the third most powerful woman in New York in 2008, behind only Hillary Clinton and Anna Wintour. Her new book just out recently, Full Circle, a memoir of leaning in too far and the journey back. Thanks, Erin. I've been looking forward to this. How are you?
I'm great, Jim. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And we'll just say right off the bat, there's still matters under litigation with Lehman, so we're going to stay away from certain topics. We'll just get that out of the way right off the bat. Did leaning in, was that a play on Facebook's Sheryl Sandberg lean in?
Yeah, yes, it was. I felt like that's actually become a kind of a reference in current society, and a lot of women in particular have focused on the message from Lean In, and really the genesis of the book came from the launch of that novel, I mean that piece of work back in March of 2013, where I wrote an op-ed piece for the New York Times as I was thinking about what the message was from Sheryl's book. So it is a reference to it. It's not intended to be antithetical to it. It is a reference to it for sure, though.
Okay. You were only in the CFO position for 6 months, so it's got to be one of the biggest rises and biggest falls ever. As we talked about, the highest-ranking woman on Wall Street at the time, and really amongst all folks your age at 42 years old. How did you process it?
It took me a long time to process it, I guess, is really the key aspect of it. I didn't process it well at the time, for sure. I, like anybody, and you're in a career and you're sort of moving generally in an upward trajectory and you're taking the next step and the next promotion, it felt that I was on a track and going in a direction. And as I talk about in the book, as that was happening, I think I was losing my way a bit, but I wasn't so sure of that. But as I got closer sort of to what I consider the pinnacle, I was definitely feeling that something was missing, that something wasn't quite right. But this was what I had spent my entire, 20-year career headed towards. So it was hard to take myself off that track and really get any perspective. So it wasn't until sort of the dramatic events around my leaving Lehman and everything that happened with respect to Lehman's bankruptcy, that I think it created enough of sort of an earthquake in my life to sit back and really take a hard look and reflect on where I was and who I was as a person and what I had become and whether that was something that I was happy with.
All right. Look at Lehman for a sec, because we're talking a rise and fall there. 158 years. I always think of, you know, something that that prestigious, that the fiduciary responsibility should be first do no harm. And you guys had let the leverage go to 44 to 1, which essentially means 1% asset write down. You wipe out your capital. Looking back, does it seem kind of inevitable, or does it seem almost irresponsible, or how do you look at that? And obviously, I'm not blaming you because you were only in the job briefly.
That is a hard thing for me to comment on at this point, other than to say that it was not out of the norm, so to speak, in terms of industry practices. As you point out, it was what it was when I took the job, and there was sort of an accepted amount of leverage that generally the investment banking community was comfortable with, the rating agency community was comfortable with in terms of rating these institutions, even the shareholder and creditor community was comfortable with. So in hindsight, of course, it may suggest that there was more leverage than could handle the kind of really dramatic events that took place in the asset markets. But in the context of the moment, it was really, really sort of in the norm of industry practices.
All right, let me ask this. Lehman culture kind of had an image of being very silo, house divided, traders versus bankers. There was the famous Glucksman-Peterson split. Lehman American Express, when they bought, they split up. How much was the culture a contributing factor of inevitability, or it's what the firm thrived on?
Lehman had a fantastic culture, and I think if you speak with people from Lehman Brothers, most people will say how much they probably miss it. What an amazing culture there was. I think it had a very unique feel to it, and it was a tone set from top down. There's no question that. I'm pretty confident about this, that in every investment bank, you have different businesses. You have banking that's an advisory business versus trading that's a risk-taking business in part. And there's always going to be some conflict between those parts of the business. And that's very natural and in some cases healthy, I think, to keep a check on each other. But I don't think that there was any kind of fatal cultural aspect at Lehman Brothers. I think that actually the culture, if anything, was responsible for the strength that the firm had for several years, you know, prior to the crisis, and also for its ability to attract a lot of talented people. So I'm not sure I would put the cultural piece into the mix.
Okay.
Let's
ask about the management mix. Now, I don't know if you've read Larry McDonald's famous book, Colossal Failure of Common Sense. And in his focus, you know, he was on the third floor doing distressed debt. So they were actually shorting the mortgage market. The fourth floor, they were manufacturing the CDOs as fast as they could with a lot of lousy stuff going in there. And he maintains that the 31st floor, where you would have been, where Dick Fuld would have been, where Joe Gregory, was a ghost ship, not in touch. What do you think about that?
Honestly, it's sort of hard for me to know what that relationship was in terms of knowledge at that point. I mean, as I said, I only stepped into the job in December of 2007. So a lot had already happened. And in fact, you know, most of practically every asset that Lehman was going to have on its balance sheet was already on its balance sheet at that point. So in terms of really knowing how familiar Dick or Joe was with those particular positions, that's hard for me to know. I really had to focus on myself, as I talk about in the book, trying to get up to speed as a rookie CFO in a very challenging environment. So, you know, my job was to get myself educated, to get myself as knowledgeable as I could about the firm's positions, and then to communicate that as well as I could to people around me. But it's hard for me to tell really about the point Larry might have been making on that.
Okay. Do you feel that Dick Fuld, Gregory, if you want to include it, took the requisite degree of responsibility they should have? I was always bothered that Dick was saying, why weren't we bailed out? And he had taken some $350 million out of Lehman in stock compensation, et cetera, which to me would have been heads he wins, tails he wins. Do you think that they did?
You know, Jim, I think you can probably tell this from the tone of my book is I've really tried to take accountability for my own actions and not really sit in judgment of anyone else's actions, other than how they might have pertained to my situation. So I really do not want to finger point. I don't want to try to now stand in judgment in 2020 hindsight and say whether someone else should have taken some kind of accountability. I said I've just tried to step out and take my own lumps about what I think I did right and what I think I could have done better in my job.
All right, that's fair. You're a good diplomat. We got about 30 seconds, so this will be quick for you. Do you think you were treated fairly ultimately?
No, not particularly, which is why I left, actually. I think if I thought I had been, I wouldn't have left. I would have been there doing something at the time of the bankruptcy. But immediately after my resignation of the CFO job, which then I felt was painted as I was fired, I wasn't happy with how I was treated, and I did feel betrayed. So I left at that point. But if I had felt treated fairly, I absolutely would have been there to the last minute, to the end, trying to make it work in whatever role I could have done.
Business Talk with Jim Campbell over the Biz Talk Radio Network. 350 stations around the country. You can go to biztalkradio.com, find the station closest to you, listen over the Internet, and also access our archive. We're going to look a little bit back at the beginning of Aaron Callan's March Up right after this.
This is a national health care alert from the Health Hotline. If you, a family member, or a loved one suffers from knee pain and have Medicare as your primary insurance, we've got great news. You could qualify for a pain-relieving knee brace at little or no cost to you. Get free delivery, and all the paperwork is handled by our accredited suppliers at no charge to you. So if you're on Medicare and have knee pain, don't wait. You may qualify to immediately receive a pain-relieving knee brace at little or no cost. Friendly agents are standing by 24/7 to help you. We also have other pain-relieving braces, too, for your shoulder, ankle, or back. You may be eligible to get these items and more at little or no out-of-pocket cost. Our friendly representatives are standing by now to help you, so please call now.
Call 855-227-0301. That's 855-227-0301. Again, 855-227-0301. That's 855-227-0301.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
What is term life insurance? It's basically a financial protection plan for your family if you pass away. It can be a hard purchase. Think about it. It's one of the few major purchases you can make that you will personally never use. But you've got to have it to protect your family. And you owe it to yourself to shop and compare to get the best possible rates. For term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, call the Term Lifeline today.
800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068. Remember, we specialize in term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more. And we have great rates for smokers, too. So call today.
800-957-6068. 800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068.
Has your life changed? Are you now in a situation where you need health insurance? Here's some simple advice. Call our health insurance hotline right now. This free service will do all the work for you. Shop the health insurance marketplace and find the plan that best meets your health insurance needs. Don't get lost searching for plans on your own. Let a licensed agent help you for free. According to a report on CNN Money, almost half of those eligible for subsidies are paying less than $3 a day for bronze or silver plans. Remember, under Obamacare, most Americans qualify for health insurance. So get ready to let us do all the work for you and find out the best health insurance plan for your needs. Call this number now.
800-659-7975. 800-659-7975. For your free health insurance quote, call now. 800-659-7975. 800-659-7975.
BizTalkRadio.com.
We're back with Foreman Lee, and CFO Erin Callen, once the most powerful woman on Wall Street. And before we go back to see the roots of this in Queens, I want to finish up on the front, again, focused totally on you. You hit bottom after this. You were Credit Suisse, we'll talk about a little bit later. And you actually tried to do damage to yourself. Take us to the bottom.
The best way to describe it is... when I left Lehman, I left really in a chaotic state, I guess it's fair to say, chaotic emotionally, and I didn't think I was going to leave, and then I felt that the firm had portrayed my resignation, which I'd offered many times, because I thought I lost credibility with a lot of the events that were happening. They turned my resignation into a public presentation of firing because I felt that that was intended for Dick to look like he made tough decisions. And I didn't think they had any kind of legitimate job for me that anyone had considered. So I really was disappointed, and that's a real understatement. I really felt betrayed, and I stepped out. But you know, given my sort of intensity of my focus on my career, and I had really made it my entire priority in life, I could not really handle the notion of sort of stepping out and getting perspective, which is probably what I should have done. My husband, Anthony, we weren't married at the time, kept encouraging me to take time and reflect, and I felt the need for redemption, like, oh, get right back at it. And I jumped into another job because I wanted to feel good about myself, and that was how I thought I could feel good about myself. And I thought I could just put it all behind me, which was unrealistic, of course. But on top of it, about 10 days into my new job at Credit Suisse, Lehman filed for bankruptcy, which I never anticipated. And about a week later, I had two FBI agents trying to serve me a subpoena. So I felt like I went in such a short time frame from sort of being on top of the world with this great reputation in my career that I worked so hard for over 20 years to now facing a criminal investigation. And I couldn't handle it. I did not have the resiliency within myself or the proper foundation of self-esteem to handle it. And I really just collapsed. I went to a very terrible place. And I don't know how better to describe it than to say you're sort of your life's work and your good reputation, and then it's destroyed, and you feel like it's just completely beyond your control. And at that point, I had many wise people around me that I'd known in the business who said, look, get ready for 10 years of litigation. This is going to be your life for the next 10 years. So I didn't handle it well would be an understatement. And my husband, Anthony, luckily got me through it and got me to a better place, but it took a long time.
And it's funny, we started off with Lehman being too leveraged. You end up, it seems, too leveraged your self-esteem on work. Do you want to talk?
Yes.
You want to talk briefly about the Christmas Eve event?
Well, no, I just I talk about it in the book, but it was actually the night before Christmas Eve, and it was December. I had just that of 2008, and I had just that week done, I think it was my first full-blown, I guess, deposition meeting with the state of New Jersey, where they were sort of criminally investigating the events around Lehman Brothers. I'd spent months at that point already prepping with lawyers regarding this initial investigation. And it was coming off of a few, you know, the months of that and the initial meeting and realizing that, you know, what really was my situation, that I was now someone who was sort of a pariah, looking as someone who, you know, basically was at the center of causing a financial crisis and potentially having criminal liability for it. So I had a very emotional night, and I got an argument with my husband over something stupid, and I took a bunch of sleeping pills. You know, that was where I was. And thank goodness he saved me from really hurting myself.
I have to say, it obviously took a lot of courage to talk about that in the book. And I might also say, it to me, it makes no sense that anybody would think that you could have any criminal involvement when you were not a finance person in terms of an accounting. You weren't running Lehman. You were only there briefly. You probably hadn't even seen a Focus report from the New York Stock Exchange before you took the job. So it seems a little nuts. Let's go back. Queens is only short geographic distance from Manhattan, but it's very large metaphorically to end up in there. Talk a little bit about where your drive came from. And I was intrigued that you were an unbelievable gymnast and then at 14 made a decision to go cold turkey and walk away from it.
Yeah, I don't, you know, who knows where some of these things come. I look at my daughter, my 15-month-old daughter now, and she's already got certain personality attributes that I say, where did that come from? I mean, so, from when I definitely was a very young child, I had drive. I mean, my parents used to tease me that even at like 4 years old, I would stand on my head in the corner of the room waiting till someone would notice that I was standing on my head. So whether it was attention-driven, whatever it was, but I always sort of was a discipline-driven kid, and gymnastics was a perfect sport for that. I played into that, and I said, it's always chicken and egg. How do you end up doing particular things? I do think it suited me, and I talk about later in the book how having done an individual sport almost became a little bit of a liability because I don't think I was a great team sport player, which I needed to be later on. But I always kind of had that drive to, I guess, do well at whatever I was doing, and wanting to sort of be accomplished and put energy and effort into, you know, the things in my life. And
how do you at age 14 decide to walk away from that?
Well, you know, I give myself a lot of credit for that. I said, I talk about in the book, I wish I had that much sort of wisdom when I got into my 30s that I had at 14. But I don't, you know, it's funny. I look back at it now and I felt like I really had my priorities in order. I could look at it and I said, hey, you know, this is only going to last another 3 or 4 years. It's not like you're a gymnast at 25 years old. And I want to have a different life. I really want to go to high school in a normal setting, you know, not to some gymnastic school where I get tutored. And I want to sort of go down a more conventional path. What I didn't anticipate was the void that really would be left behind when I made that decision. But, you know, I dealt with it. But there was a huge void left behind because I did sort of have all those tendencies towards what I'll call sort of extremist behavior, even at that young age. So.
You know, it's fascinating to me is then take you to the end of your career there at Lehman, and you actually felt that you were moving so quickly, 10 jobs in 10 years. You were in line to potentially be the CEO, but you couldn't get off the track, you felt, because and here it is at age 14, you were able to get off the track. You're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell. We will be right back. We're going to look a little bit deeper into the fall of Lehman from as it related directly with Aaron only before we get to the full circle comeback.
Do you want to take the great shows of BizTalk Radio wherever you go? Well, now you can with the new BizTalk Radio app for iPhone and Android devices. Now all the great shows of BizTalk Radio are with you wherever you go, just an arm's reach away on your smartphone. Download today at the App Store or the Google Play Store and get the brand new BizTalk Radio app. It's biz for you wherever you go with the new BizTalk Radio app.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing ASAP. We're looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we'll give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything. Editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, call Page Publishing now for your free author submission kit. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call.
888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. That's 888-785-0618.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 877-439-MYTV.
The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. So cancel the cable and get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money.
Call 877-439-MYTV.
At just $24.99, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card.
That's 1-877-439-MYTV.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off.
Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
We paid less for our Craftmatic today than we did 20 years ago.
If you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Rated number one by consumers nationwide on ConsumerAffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come in all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam, for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. Enjoy temporary relief of low back pain, poor circulation, nighttime heartburn, mild arthritis. You'll sleep better in a Craftmatic adjustable bed. So if you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and information, and then decide when you see how little they cost. Discover Craftmatic for less, up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand.
Call 1-800-316-5271. That's 1-800-316-5271. 1-800-316-5271. Call now.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
BizTalkRadio.com.
And we're with Aaron Callen. She's got a new book out, Full Circle, a memoir of leaning in too far in the journey back. We're going to do a little baptism by fire now and then about getting thrown into this job. But before we do that, I want to ask one thing from the last segment. You went to Harvard, and then you were a lawyer at Simpson Thatcher. You started to say that at the law firm, you started to divide yourself so that you didn't think you really brought your authentic self in an integrated way. Was that a big issue?
A big issue. You don't know where you get these notions from. I have this notion that, you know, you come to work, I refer to it as like this disembodied intellect, and you kind of leave the personal side, at the door, so to speak. I think that why it became a bit of an issue for me is if you do that, you don't really thoroughly enjoy and engage, I think, the job. So for me, after 5 years or so when I was practicing tax law, corporate tax law, although I liked it intellectually and enjoyed it, you know, there were a few different things popping up at that point. One of them was I sort of wanted to be a little more front and center on transactions and less of a consultant, which is the nature of it when you're a tax lawyer. But I also felt that because I hadn't really brought my true self to the office every day, that I wasn't as fulfilled, and it was easier, in a sense, for me to walk away and look for something else where I thought maybe that I would be able to do that. And I'm not suggesting the environment stopped me, but I don't know that the environment was as welcoming of personality as I think I ultimately found at Lehman and where I found I was able to do that.
So things are looking a little scary on the street. Bear Stearns had a big episode with a fund, and then they went down. It didn't seem logical to me that, okay, this is where we are. Let's put somebody in who's not in the finance function, who hasn't been on the executive committee, who is going to have a huge learning curve. Did you feel used or something that, you know, you were going to be the presentable front of Lehman during this crisis?
What you see at the surface is, of course, not what really goes on behind the scenes. So they had asked me to be Dick Fuld and Joe Gregory, the CEO and the president, had asked me to be the CFO back in February of 2007. So it's hard to rewind back that far, but in February of 2007, I'm sure there were some people, but there were certainly not a lot of people who saw that there were any big fundamental issues in the asset markets. And so things were looking pretty good at that point. And if anything, Lehman had diversified its businesses globally and by business type. Profitability was increasing. You know, everything seemed on an upswing, in fact. And that was really the context of it. So, of course, by the time I took the job on December 1st, the world was changing, and it was changing quickly. But that was the starting point. I talk about in the book how the actual implementation got deferred for various reasons during the course of the summer of 2007 into the fall. And I also talk about the fact that I was still doing my job running the hedge fund business, really the hedge fund advisory business at Lehman, and really wasn't privy to any, I wasn't privy to any confidential financial information. I was only aware of whatever was the publicly disclosed information at that point. So it's not that I myself going into it had any particular knowledge any different from the rest of the world about the state of Lehman Brothers. So I said, when you look at it back to the timing, I guess someone could have shifted gears at the end, but the original timing, there wasn't the concern that ultimately, you know, became a reality, which is, I think it was tough for any CFO to be a CFO of an investment bank during that time frame, let alone being a new CFO.
Okay, now we'll talk about grace under pressure here. This is amazing to me. You were on those famous calls. We'll talk about two of them. The first one, the quarterly earnings, and there's 10,000 people on the conference call, which I didn't even know that extent existed. And you're doing it by yourself, and you've only just gotten in the job. How did you go about that? How did you do it? Did you feel you were over your head?
It's a good question, but I don't think I allowed myself to think like that is probably the best answer. I didn't know before I got on the call that there would be that many people. It was only as people were dialing in that the operator was letting us know that. So, and I did have a couple of colleagues around me, but they were people who worked for me and were also relatively new in their position. So it wasn't completely alone, but it was three of us. But I think, and I talk about this in the book, I think it was a mix of trust and hubris, both, that as I look back at that call, because trust in the sense that there was a decision made that I should do the call without any other senior management, and that wasn't my decision. That was a decision made by Dick and by Joe Gregory. I think I understand why they made that decision. I'm not sure. I don't think it was the right decision, but that I understand why it was made. There was a rationale for it. So that was one aspect. Hey, if they think I can do it, and these are the people that have been doing this thing for 40 years, then I guess I can do it. It was a bit of that. I trust them. This must be the right decision. And I think hubris in the sense of, I thought I was up for it, which is a little crazy in some sense. And I can't chalk that up to anything but a little bit of arrogance, I suppose, you know, that I thought I was possibly up to it. Now, I think I was up to it as best as I could be. I mean, I think I had a command of the information and what I needed to communicate and how I needed to communicate it.
And you actually stopped the stock, which was going down like 30% a day. So you did stabilize it from that call.
Yeah, and I said, you know, my objective was not that per se. My objective was to effectively and clearly communicate the information. That's how I saw my job. And I knew that was something I could do. I knew I could effectively and clearly communicate the information. The information is what it is. And so I said, when I look back on that, it's a little shocking to me how the events played out. And I think if I had had probably more years under my belt and been a little bit more savvy in that particular role, I would have said, hey, this is not a great decision. Yeah. We need our CEO on the call. Bear Stearns nearly collapsed, you know, a few days ago. This is how it has to play out.
But yeah, it looked to the rest of the world, us, that they hung you out to dry. But as you say fairly in the book, that they hadn't been on those calls in the past, and they thought it might have fomented crisis if suddenly they're on there. But obviously you were alone. Let me talk about the second call. This was in mid-May with Einhorn, a famous call. And first I want to ask why you allowed a separate one to go. And secondly, the impression that came out of that was he knew more about the real value of your assets than you did. And of course, the credibility of Lehman, you know, kind of went down after that. Talk about that one.
All I can say about that is, again, as a new CFO, this wasn't my decision to have this call. He had requested a call, and Dick and Joe decided that I should do the call. So you remember, I wasn't the boss. I had bosses. So I did report to both of them. And this was the kind of thing that, you know, wasn't my decision. So it was something I was told to do, and I did. And I did to the best of my abilities. And as we all know, it didn't go particularly well.
Did you know at the time it didn't go well? Did you find that you were surprised at the knowledge he had, or you didn't? It didn't hit you till later.
No, I knew at the time it didn't go well. I think he spoke 4 days later or whatever the time frame was at the Sohn conference.
Right.
You know, so and about shorting the stock. So, but I knew when I hung up that it didn't go well. And no, I can't say I wasn't surprised about his knowledge. You know, he'd done his homework. It's just you can tell when you have a call with whether it's an investor, a creditor, a rating agency, whoever it is, whether it went well or it didn't go well. It was obvious it didn't go well. I knew right at the moment that I hung up that it hadn't gone well.
Now, your husband makes a good point that you put in the book, which is when you've got new trainees in the fire department, they call them probies, they don't get thrown into the fires by themselves.
Yes, no, I do make that reference because that's what he would always say to me. And it was a decision that was made that obviously in retrospect wasn't a very good decision. And I said what was weird for me about it personally was the media decided to make it this kind of individual battle between myself and David Einhorn, which was such a strange aspect of it to me, because as far as I was concerned, I'm speaking on behalf of Lehman. I'm not speaking as Aaron. It really took a very odd twist and an odd direction, I think, because there was some appeal to presenting it that way.
You're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell from our flagship stations, Yale Radio, WIBC, and WGCH here in Greenwich, Connecticut. And we're going to talk about how Aaron came full circle in our final national segment coming right up.
All right, guys, we're ready for our four-season sunroom, and Daddy's going to get a rec room with refreshments.
Oh, no, we'll be sleeping under the stars.
Mom, what about the one with, you know, the fun?
Nice try, little bro. It's a gym. My gym.
Hey, Grandma's getting her Four Seasons garden room. Weather tight and still like being outdoors.
Maybe a living room. Oh, no, wait. A family hub.
Yeah!
No matter what the budget, the season, or the climate, Four Seasons sunrooms let you and your family enjoy the outdoors inside. Call now to hear more about these great offers from the premier manufacturer of sunrooms since 1975.
More reasons for Four Seasons now.
To find out more, call toll-free 800-933-5775. That's 800-933-5775.
I've owned my company for 14 years now, and I can tell you that payroll is a four-letter word. I hate doing it. It eats up hours I don't have, and it costs me money I could be saving, but my accountant's too expensive, and I'm not sure who to call. But I know I need help.
We're Paychex, and we take all the hassles out of small business payroll. We save you time and money. It's easy. Call, fax, or give us your payroll information securely online, and we take care of the rest. We calculate the correct taxes, manage payments and direct deposits. We even send out your checks. Payroll doesn't need to be a four-letter word anymore. We're so sure that we can save you time and money that we'll give you a month's payroll free. Just for calling 877-726-3369. Get 1 month's payroll for free. Call Paychex right now. 877-726-3369. That's 877-726-3369.
Here's George Foreman with InventHelp.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
To get your free inventor's information, call 1-800-351-1453. That's 1-800-351-1453. Again, 1-800-351-1453.
What is term life insurance? It's basically a financial protection plan for your family if you pass away. It can be a hard purchase. Think about it. It's one of the few major purchases you can make that you will personally never use. But you've got to have it to protect your family. And you owe it to yourself to shop and compare to get the best possible rates. For term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, call the Term Lifeline today.
800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068. Remember, we specialize in term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, and we have great rates for smokers too. So call today. 800-957-6068. 800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068.
Do you owe $10,000 or more on at least two federal student loans? Then you may qualify for new programs offered by the Department of Education. These programs can reduce your interest, lower your payments, and possibly qualify you for loan forgiveness. If you have $10,000 or more and at least two federal student loans and currently not in school, you may qualify for one of these programs. Call now to check your eligibility. Student loan advisors are standing by to help you determine if you qualify for these new programs. They can help you reduce your interest, lower your payment, and even forgive a portion of your student loan debt. Take control of your financial future. Make this free 5-minute, free call now to Nationwide Student Loans and learn how you can reduce your student loan debt.
800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588.
BizTalkRadio.com.
Our guest, Erin Callen, former Wall Street star, and she finds a life. Completing the full circle comeback. First off, it's very interesting in your book that all your big successes are coincident with relationship failures.
That's a good observation, Jim. I made my career the number one priority of my life. As time went on, what I like to tell people, particularly younger people, is that you don't make that decision. Most people don't make the decision at 18, 19, 20 years old. It's a decision that happens subtly. You erode your personal life and erode it little by little over time. And I took 20 years to completely erode it practically by just constantly putting a little more energy into the work part of my life and a little less energy into my personal relationships. So every time I'd get into a relationship, it'd start out okay, things would roll along. And then, subtly, I'd just start making decisions that would constantly place what I was doing with my job over the relationship, and ultimately they would fail. And it's not a big surprise how that would happen.
Okay, one final thing on Lehman. And after 6 years, you got a phone call from Dick Fuld. And you can tell us a little bit about that. And, you know, the perception has always been that this guy just made you accountable. He hung you to dry, et cetera.
One thing that always sort of bothered me after the fact was I did like Dick as a person, and I did think he looked out for me most of the time, and I did feel good about working for him as a CEO. So when all the events happened and I felt betrayed and I left, I never knew quite how to square that with what had been my prior judgment. And Dick calling me all these years later really spoke to the fact that I think my judgment wasn't as flawed as originally maybe perceived, because he did call and he did talk to me about what happened and how bad he felt and how much he had respected me and how he had thought I was the right person for the job and how badly he felt about how all the events played out. So I do think there's a lot more to Dick than people give him credit for, and there's not a lot of people that probably know him very well, but I'm not going to say any bad things about him.
No, and to your credit, you said that you took the call, and it meant a lot to you, but you were healthy enough at this point that it didn't change your whole world, your self-esteem. How about getting to the hero? One of the heroes of the story is Anthony Montella, who's your current husband. He emails you coldly after an interview with Maria Bartiromo, who we've had on. Talk a little bit about that big change.
Anthony's the reason sort of for everything. He's the reason I'm here right now. He's the reason I'm living a happy life right now. I have a beautiful daughter. And I say in the book, you think it'd be the worst possible moment that this person who I knew from when I was a young kid in high school sees me and decides he's going to try to email me, guesses at my email, just to say, hey, wow, I think you're doing something amazing, back and forth. And then, we finally get together, and he turns out to be the love of my life. And the person, however, on top of that, who grounded me and gave me some kind of foundation and something to hold on to, and most importantly, perspective. Anthony had gone through his own dramas. Anthony's worked in Midtown Manhattan as a firefighter, and his entire company was there at 9/11. It was his first day of vacation. He lost his company. He had to live with sort of survivor guilt, and he went down to the site right after. But, he was through a real drama, not the kind of drama I went through. He went through a real drama, and he gave me a sense of perspective on what really happened and what life was about. And he's led me to this place now that I have real happiness, because I've really gone back to what I say full circle to the priorities I really grew up with, which was family and friends and relationships. And so he really is the hero of my story.
I call it the three G's from your book, Golf, GOP, and God, that way your father originally wanted you to do. Tell us who you are now, what you're doing now, what your mission is now.
My mission now is to raise my daughter as well as I can, be a great mom, be a great wife. I don't advocate this sort of strange way I've lived my life. I sort of had young women come to me and say, oh, isn't it great? You worked really hard for 20 years on your career, and then you stepped out, and now you get to live, you're like basically 20 years of a personal life, or however long it's going to be. And I say, that's not balance. That's not a good strategy. That's not how you want to do it. So I've never achieved work-life balance. All I like to talk about is the fact that I didn't achieve it. I'm trying to live the other part of my life now, the part I completely missed out on when I was spending all my time at work. And I'm lucky and blessed that I get to do that. I get to focus on my daughter, and I get to focus on my husband. So it's a radically different life, but for the kind of person I am, I think I needed to do things radically differently than before.
So you're an all-in kind of person, obviously. So this is how you define all-in now. Do you think that at some point that you might want to go back and do something in the work world, or not, or this is going to be the mission?
Writing this book was something, something different, but something that wasn't exactly, being a wife and mother every day. Mm-hmm. I think I have a message to share that was the point of writing the book, and I really look at it as, I'm not sure. I really am going forward with, we'll see where things take us. I'm happy to have written the book. I've gotten so many amazing responses from mm-hmm. people about how it spoke to them, how it made them feel better, how it inspired them, whatever it did. And I feel so good about that's what's come of it. So sort of just taking it each day and deciding, where I go with it, if I go anywhere with it. But I think going back to any kind of conventional finance job, no, that's not in the picture for sure. That's not where I want to go with things.
But maybe a good golf handicap?
Not yet. I just had a baby 15 months ago, so there hasn't been a lot of golf over the last 15 months, let's put it that way. But eventually, maybe. I'm hoping.
Do you have a final 30 seconds for young women and young men who are just going into this world?
The most important thing I could share is, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, but is, no one really starts out wanting to make their career their entire priority and wanting to give little to no energy to their personal life. But so we do make a lot of decisions every day that lead us to a place or decisions we don't make. And you just have to be cognizant of, is that the direction you want to go? And when you make those little decisions, what are going to be the implications cumulatively over time?
Well, a lot of grace under pressure. And as I say, when somebody faces a fall, the issue is, do they get back up? And obviously, Full Circle is an appropriate name of the book, a memoir of leaning in too far and the journey back. It's self-published, which, by the way, was also interesting to me. You said that you guys even were going to mandate a work-life balance versus a publicity tour if you've used a major publishing
house.
I guess that's living your words. Our next show, we've got a professor of psychology at Northwestern University, Dan McAdams. He's done an objective study. Is Donald Trump psychologically fit to be president? Thanks to Aaron Callan. Thanks to our national audience for listening. We'll see everybody next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. BizTalkRadio.com.